Hey guys, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and got another podcast for you here. It's been a little over a week since I did my last one, so I got a few posts to go over and stuff like that. But anyways, hope everybody's having a good week, and today being Friday, hope you guys got a good weekend planned, some riding and some other fun stuff in there, hopefully. So, but anyways, jump right into what we have going on over at BikeJames.com. After my last podcast, I posted a video on the Turkish getup, and the Turkish getup is one of my favorite exercises. And this video here was actually one of the first videos that I've ever posted to YouTube, and it's gotten like over 90,000 views right now, and so, you know, approaching the 100,000 view mark, which would be pretty interesting. Definitely never thought when I posted some videos that I'd have some of them approaching those numbers there. But so I posted this just kind of show you guys some of my old stuff if you haven't been over on YouTube and seen all the videos I got posted there. But this is it, one of the first videos we had going. The Turkish getup, you know, is one of those exercises that, you know, doesn't look extremely sport-specific for mountain biking, which is kind of one of the subjects of one of the posts that I made, but it actually is just a great exercise, great core training, great hip mobility and hip strength, great shoulder stability, you know, just all those things that we need as mountain bikers are represented in this exercise. So if you've not seen the Turkish getup before, then this is a good video demo of it to go check out, and even if you have seen it before, good to go, and if you've seen any of my videos, it's good to go back and watch and kind of laugh at my old stuff a little bit and kind of see some of the better coaching cues and some of the things that I've learned and been implementing since then. But anyway, so that was what I got posted on June 8th, and then on the 10th I posted what I think is a really good blog post and something I think everybody should read and think about, and it's basically training versus working hard. And where this came from is I get emails from people, particularly people doing the dumbbell combo program, because one of the exercises in the dumbbell combo program is the single leg deadlift, which is one of the most mountain bike specific exercises out there, but it's also one of the hardest ones to execute, especially if you've never done it before. And so, you know, if you go from, you know, what you think, you know, lifting a lot of weight to trying this weird single leg deadlifting movement, and, you know, you can hardly use any weight at all, people start to get worried. They think that they're not, quote unquote, working hard enough to get anything out of the workout, you know, that there has to be a certain amount of weight and effort attached to the training session in order for there to be any gain from that training session. And, you know, training is not the same thing as working hard. You know, working hard is part of training, but just because you worked hard didn't mean it was a good training session. And, you know, this is especially true in today's fitness culture, where you've got things like CrossFit and boot camp workouts and stuff like that, where people are coming, you know, they're not really training. You know, training is about acquiring and refining a skill. And the acquisition part is the first part of that process. You have to acquire the skill before you can refine it. And acquisition of a skill is the real hard part. It takes a lot of mental effort. It takes a lot of, you know, just honing in on how you're moving and how you're creating the movement and what's working and how it's working. And, you know, once you've really, you know, kind of got that down and you've got the skill acquired, that's when you start refining the skill, and that's where the quote-unquote hard work comes in. Because remember, you don't want to lay fitness on top of dysfunction. If you have a dysfunctional movement pattern, like for example, if you cannot execute a single leg deadlift properly with just body weight, then adding load to that pattern is not going to help us as much as taking the time to clean that pattern up at body weight level if need be. And then, you know, once you have that skill acquired of that, the skills you need acquired for that exercise, then you can start adding load. Then you can start building on that good movement. And so that's where the hard work comes in. So, you know, learning to move better and addressing the true weaknesses in your movement that are holding you back are, you know, the best ways, I think, to result in improved performance. You know, just beating the hell out of yourself every time you go to the gym and working hard probably won't. You know, remember that your goal is to be a better rider, okay? It's not to be a better lifter. Who cares what's happening in the gym? Who cares what the numbers in the gym are? Yes, there's a correlation. Yes, you need to get strong. But ultimately, who cares? You know, if I could make you the best rider in the world lifting pink 2-pound dumbbells, would you take it? Or would you say, no, I'd rather be a subpar rider because I need to lift heavy weights? You know, it's really kind of how you have to look at it. You know, slowing down and acquiring the skills that you need is the real essence of training, of acquiring and refining the skills that we're looking for on the bike. That's what we're trying to accomplish with our gym time. And so, again, you know, working hard and training is not the same thing. You know, yeah, working hard can be part of training, but just remember that when you are introduced to something like the single leg deadlift that is an important movement for you to get down, then, you know, you don't need to worry about working hard while you're trying to learn the movement. Just learning to move better will make you a better rider. So it's not so much about the weight at first. So anyway, so that's kind of the idea there, you know, training versus working hard. And I know this. I had to learn this one the hard way. You know, if you think that I've never had any injuries from, you know, training and stuff like that, you know, that's how I ended up where I am today, is trying to figure out, well, how, you know, how do I become a better rider without beating the hell out of myself in the process and just tearing myself down? And, you know, like one of the things that always kind of cracked me up was, you know, trying to define how effective a workout is by how sore you are. Again, this is part of that hard, that work hard mentality. You know, if you're not sore the next day, then you didn't work hard enough. Well, if you're super sore the next day, you can't ride your bike. Did that really make you a better rider? You know, I mean, so again, just kind of a little view into my world and how I look at training. So again, just real important concept for all of us to kind of, you know, continually think about training versus working hard. What's the difference? And, you know, how do we take advantage of both? And so next thing I posted on the 12th of this month, was an article. This is actually a reprint. If you've been reading my stuff for a while, this is an article I wrote probably about a year or so ago on the unilateral training benefits for mountain biker. You know, unilateral training is basically where you're doing one side at a time. And, you know, in the article I do mention there is kind of a common misconception that using dumbbells, for example, is unilateral training. You know, say for example, if you're doing a shoulder press and instead of using a bar, you're holding two dumbbells, that is unilateral training. That's still bilateral training. Even though each dumbbell is moving independent of each other, you're still moving both sides at one time. So true unilateral training is where only one side is moving at a time. And so, you know, there are four advantages to unilateral training. And if you're not using unilateral training in your program, then you're missing out big time on some benefits that you should be getting from your program. Because remember, the whole idea is we're trying to become better riders. So number one is it'll increase your pedaling power. So unilateral lower body exercises like the single leg deadlift, like I mentioned earlier, the single leg squat, pedaling occurs one leg at a time, and each leg is working independently of each other. You're not pedaling two legs at a time. You know, try pressing down on both pedals at the same time. You know, they don't go anywhere. You have to press down with one foot with one leg at a time. And since unilateral exercises require your limbs to act alone, then that is really the most pedaling-specific way to train your lower body. And you've probably heard the suggestion or know somebody who's done this where they pedal with just one foot on the pedal and they're trying to work their spin on each foot independently and get to where their spin on each foot is smooth. Well, just like you want to try to, you know, do that, and you know, again, I really even kind of question the value, the time and effort it takes to do that if it actually relates, you know, gives you that much more on the trail. But anyways, kind of the same idea behind unilateral training. When you do one leg at a time, it gives you a chance to note strength imbalances. So if you've got one leg that is significantly stronger than the other, that means that you're getting less horsepower out of that weaker leg. And so if you can get that, if you can get the strength levels even, and you can get that weaker leg to get stronger, then now you're going to actually be laying down more horsepower with that leg each time you pedal. So those are two ways. It's going to, you know, it's a more specific training method for pedaling because of the unilateral one-legged nature of pedaling, and it'll also give you a chance to identify strength imbalances and make sure that you're getting everything you can out of each leg. You know, the second advantage is injury rehab and prevention. Again, you know, I'm really big on this. If you're hurt, it doesn't matter how fit you are. And so you don't want to get hurt. You know, unilateral training really helps keep us, you know, from developing asymmetries and strength imbalances that lead to injuries down the road. And when you're coming back from an injury, your non-injured side is going to be stronger than the injured side is. And so the only way for you to restore balance is through unilateral training. There's absolutely no way that you can do bilateral training and expect to restore balance between those two limbs. And so you have to, if you're coming back from an injury, I you know, personally with the people I work with, we do almost no bilateral work. You know, we have to get the weaker side built back up. You know, the third advantage is that it does recruit more muscles. And, you know, without getting too much into, you know, the anatomy and stuff, there are literally, you know, there are stabilization muscles, especially with the lower body exercises, that don't get recruited during bilateral exercises. And so, you know, for example, unilateral leg exercises require the abductors and adductors, the muscles on the inner and outer thigh, to fire in a synchronized manner in order to maintain balance. That doesn't happen when you're doing regular squats and deadlifts. So that's why you have to use one-legged exercises, or else you are not activating and strengthening those muscles. In fact, this is the main reason that people feel so unbalanced when they start unilateral leg exercises, because they simply don't know how to, their body doesn't know how to act one leg at a time. It hasn't used those muscles in that manner, and so it doesn't know how to do it, and it's trying to figure it out. So, you know, getting the body used to the demands that are placed on it by unilateral training will make for more fluid athletic movement on the bike, and that's what we want. That's what leads to trail flow, is that fluid athletic movement. And the last benefit, and, you know, obviously not the last one ever, but, you know, just kind of the last one in the article that I pointed out, was that it builds strength in a spine-friendly manner. And, you know, just like anything else in life, overuse will start to cause problems. And I obviously, you know, I love squats and I love deadlifts, but they, after a while, man, they will start to put a lot of undue stress on the spinal column, especially if that's all you do are heavy squats and heavy deadlifts for your strength work. So if you use a unilateral version of these lifts, you're going to get all the previously mentioned advantages, plus they're going to allow you to build strength with literally less than half the stress on the spinal column. So, you know, for example, if you can deadlift 300 pounds, I guarantee you that you can't do a single leg deadlift with 150 pounds. You know, it's going to be less than that. And so you're actually, as far as your body is concerned, from a stress standpoint, from a muscle tension standpoint, like, that's all your body knows is tension, okay? So, you know, if you're producing the tension, then your body's going to respond to it. So if you're, you know, producing the same amount of tension in that leg with less than half of the weight, then you're going to get the strength gains without putting the wear and tear on the spinal column. And in this aspect alone, for people that have had back problems, this breathes new life into your workout, because all of a sudden you can do squats and you can do deadlifts. You just need to do them one leg at a time. And so that will help you get these movements back into your program without, you know, increasing the chance of a re-injury. So, you know, if you add it all up, you've got the, you know, I mean, unilateral exercises honestly should make up the bulk of your training program. So that's what, you know, kind of my opinion on it. So just some things I ran over, you know, some of my favorite exercises, and I'll definitely do an article and some videos on this. This is a good subject for me here. You know, like a unilateral dumbbell bench press, like literally try doing a dumbbell bench press, just one dumbbell at a time, and you'll feel your abs firing off in ways that you never knew were possible. You know, unilateral shoulder presses, you know, unilateral deadlifts, you know, unilateral squats or a full pistol squat if you can. So, you know, there's a lot of different great exercise variations that you can use. And so, you know, you can either, you know, if you're not following one of my programs and you want to start incorporating unilateral training into your program, then pick a day when you go to the gym and you do nothing but unilateral exercises. Like, that's a good way to kind of introduce this into your program and stuff like that. But you will be stinking sore in some weird areas. I guarantee you that you will. So be ready for that. The next post that I made on the 15th is actually a kind of a subject I was touching on earlier. But sport-specific doesn't have to look like your sport. And this stems, again, kind of from, I think, the Dumbbell Combos program. I've been getting a lot of feedback on it lately, because especially ever since my article in Decline came out on Dumbbell Combos last month, I've been getting, you know, a lot of people have been buying it and been getting a lot of feedback on it. And you know, besides the single leg deadlift, one of the exercises that I use in it is the side press. And the side press is an exercise that's actually taken from kettlebell lifting, and it's a one-arm shoulder press with a lateral body bend incorporated into the movement. And so, you know, I've got a picture on the blog post. You know, I've got videos on YouTube, I think, of this exercise, or I'll have to get one posted. But basically, people ask me, like, why do you use this exercise? This doesn't look like anything that you do on your bike. You know, people can kind of look at the unilateral deadlift and say, all right, that kind of looks like me on my bike, you know, the leg movement and the position. But what's with this side press? This, I don't understand. This doesn't look like anything that we do on the bike. And so basically in my article, you know, I talk about, or my blog post, I guess, not really quite long enough to be an article, but I just talk about a guy named Ian King, who is a very big influence on my career. And he had a saying that you can, you know, that you judge the effectiveness of a program by its transfer over to your sport, not by how much it resembles your sport in the gym. And so, you know, again, the idea is that you need to, you know, look at what's the transfer that I'm getting from this. And so with this exercise in particular, you know, the lateral body bend, which should be coming from the hips, like when you lean over to the side as you're pressing the dumbbell up, you should be shifting your hips over towards the foot of the side you're pressing the dumbbell up. So if you're, say you've got the dumbbell on your right side, and you start to press it over your head, and as you're pressing, you should be shifting your hips over to the right side and leaning over, and then bring your hips back to center, and then bring the dumbbell back down to the start position. And the whole lean should be generating from the hips. And so this is actually a very important drill, like hip mechanics, for cornering on the trail. The lateral hip mobility and the lateral hip strength that you need to execute this exercise is what you need on the trail to be able to counterbalance yourself when you lean yourself or your bike or both over in a corner. And so, you know, that's kind of why I include this exercise, and, you know, and you know, just wanting to explain, like, why I think this is such a great mountain bike specific exercise, but also using this as a chance to show you that, you know, sport specific doesn't have to look like your sport. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of times, you know, sport specific programs and, you know, mountain bike specific programs and stuff like that are really, you know, a trainer sitting down and trying to figure out, well, how many exercises that I know look like something you do on your bike. And so that's how something like an upright row, which is an extremely popular mountain biking exercise. And for those of you that don't know, it's basically where you have a bar, dumbbells in front of you, and you just lift the dumbbells up, or the bar up until they're, you know, upper chest, like about collarbone level, and then bring it back down. It's just basically lifting the bar straight up, and then back down, and it looks like picking the front end of your bike up, but that's not actually how you pick the front end of your bike up. The front end of your bike should be picked up. You should generate that from your hips, and it's actually a much different movement than a upright row. But an upright row, like I said, is one of the most common mountain bike specific quote unquote exercises because it looks like something you do on the trail. While my program is probably one of the only ones that incorporates a side press, it doesn't look like what you do on the trail, but the movement principles behind it are what you do on the trail. The upright row looks like something you do on your bike, but when you really understand movement and you look at what you're doing on your bike, they're not the same thing. So again, just kind of belaboring the point, sport specific doesn't have to look like your sport. So and the side press, if you're not using it, do. It's an awesome exercise and something you should definitely try to incorporate in there. And then the last thing that I got posted was on the 16th, and it was basically a Q&A that I got from a rider about why don't you use super high reps. And, you know, a lot of my stuff really focuses on what most people would consider to be relatively low reps. Like for me, 12 reps is pretty high, and so basically what, just kind of real quick background on what happened. This newsletter reader had been doing basically, three sets of 10 reps for his exercises for a long, long time, like many, many, many months. And while he was concentrating on good things like the deadlift and the standing shoulder press, he kind of felt like he wasn't seeing as much in the way of results. And so he tried a new workout where they had him do, I think I read it as 10 sets of 50 reps, but I think he corrected me and told me it was actually 50 sets of 10 reps, but basically 500 total reps, either way you add it up. And, and so he thought that, hey, man, there may be something to this. So he started doing 30 sets of 10 reps with his routine, and he started to experience some results. And so this led him to conclude, well, super high reps might be a good way to train. Maybe I'd never thought about it. Why he sent me an email asking, why don't you use them? Here are the results that I've experienced. And so, basically my response was that, twofold. One, different set and rep schemes bring about different results. Okay, like 3 sets of 10 is more of a muscle building scheme. 3 sets of 5 is more of a strength building scheme. That's going to work more on the nervous system and coordinating things along those lines. Whereas 3 sets of 10 reps will tear down the muscle tissue more, deplete glycogen, basically signal your body to try to build bigger muscles. That's why bodybuilders do 3 sets of 10, and that's why powerlifters and strength guys do 3 sets of 5. That's one of the things. Like you can't get around these facts that certain set and rep schemes bring about certain results. And if you know what kind of results you want, then you can pick out set and rep schemes that are going to get you there. And that's part of program design. But doing like 30 sets of 10 reps is going to work a lot on local muscle endurance. And while working on local muscle endurance may seem logical for an endurance athlete, I personally think that you need to use your gym time to get stronger. You need strength on your bike, and this is kind of one of the fundamental things behind my program. You need strength and you need power on your bike, but you don't use it enough on your bike to develop it. So that's why you have to get into the gym and get strong. So, always turning everything that you do into an endurance session will not produce a well-rounded rider. You can't look at turning every single time you train into it being a cardio endurance event. You have to be strong, you have to be powerful, and you have to, use programs and set and rep schemes and workouts that let you do that. And so, but I did point out too, he did experience some good results. And on my end, I'll always tell you, it's hard to argue with results. If that's producing results for you, great. I don't think that it's producing the best results possibly, but hey, if you think that it is, then great. But here's what I think is happening. If someone never did strength training before and then they started to do leg presses, they'd see some results. And that, a lot of people would, conclude, hey, leg presses are a great way to train. it doesn't mean that leg presses are the best way to train for mountain biking. And if you just stopped there because you found something that produced something, you'd miss out on deadlifts and single leg squats and other more effective exercises. So what I think had happened was that, you know, his body had adapted to the set and rep scheme. Your body actually adapts very quickly to the set and rep scheme. It takes about 4 to 6 weeks for that to happen. And so, you know, I think what had happened was his body had grown so stale because of the same routine every time he went into the gym that when he switched to something radically different, it shocked his body into adapting. It's going to happen, you know. But it's not that this set and rep scheme is the best or that there's anything really great behind it. It's just it was different than what he was doing, and that produced some results. And so but the same thing is going to happen if you know, you continue, if you switch and you find something, oh, this produced some results, and then you overuse it, you're eventually going to run into the same problem. You're going to stop seeing results, and then you're going to switch to something else and it'll start producing some results, and you'll think that it's the best thing since sliced bread. But that's not what training is about. What you need to do is every 4 to 6 weeks, switch your sets and reps in a logical manner. Understand, what is this set and rep scheme producing? You know, what did I do last month? What do I want to work on now? What's the set and rep scheme that's going to get me there? And you'd also be much better off sticking with the same basic exercises and switching your sets and reps every month than you would be if you stuck with the same sets and reps and switch your exercises every month, which is what most people do. And that's actually the wrong way to go about it. Your body adapts to the actual exercise itself the slowest and adapts to the sets and reps that you're doing the quickest. And so that's kind of the idea behind the training, is switch the sets and reps without over switching the exercises, because you don't need an extreme amount of variety and you never get a chance to master anything. So that's kind of the idea behind that. So that's why I don't use super high reps in my program. You know, I want you to get strong and get powerful, but that is why people that switch to doing super high reps feel like they start seeing results, because if it's different than what they were doing, it will produce some sort of result. So anyway, so that's basically it. But so that wraps it up kind of for this this podcast and this summary of the blog post from the last week and a half or so. I'm actually getting ready to get on a plane this evening and go out to Southern California. I'm going to go do an internship, a four-day internship at Alan Cosgrove's facility. If you don't know who Alan Cosgrove is, he's one of the leading fitness guys out there. The guy's got several books out, you know, writes for Men's Health and Men's Fitness and runs one of the most successful training facilities in the country. And so I'm going to do a four-day internship out there. I'm extremely excited to get a chance to talk to somebody like him about training and get some new good ideas and stuff like that for my own programs and things. And so so anyways, I'll be back. I'll still be making some posts next week as I get a chance, between my internship and stuff like that. But I'll definitely be, you know, back in the swing of things the following week, and hopefully have a bunch of new ideas and ways to kind of take this whole thing to the next level. So once again, it's been James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems. If you got any questions or comments on any of these things, be sure to check out my blog at bikejames.com and post a comment. I'll be happy to get back to you as soon as I can there. And as always, thanks so much for taking the time to listen to this. I really appreciate it. And, let me know if you ever have any questions or comments. It's james@mtbstrengthcoach.com. And I guess I will talk to you guys next time.